Hello and welcome to Good to Know Shreveport-Bossier, a podcast showcasing the good things happening in our community. I'm Nate Fluharty. This is my co-host, Paul Reeser, a local businessman and member of the Committee of 100. And each podcast here, we love to focus on the topics and initiatives that are having a positive impact on our community. Certainly a lot of things to talk about. We have a very special guest in studio today. So, Paul, I'll let you introduce today's guest. Nice to have you again, my friend.
Well, thanks, Nate. Hey, and thanks for being here today, stepping in for Jeff.
Yeah.
And thanks for being nice. So when Jeff comes back, could you give him some lessons on how to, like, give a nice introduction?
I can certainly try to do that.
I'm a little off my game right now. I haven't been insulted.
give me time. No way. But it's easy to do that when you're surrounded by good people, and we certainly have the best here today when we talk about good things.
Now, talking about good things. So we're talking about history today, Shreveport history. Shreveport has such a remarkable history, and a lot of things I've heard about, the music history and science and different things, but today we're going to talk about something, a story I wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
So in the 1800s, there was a yellow fever epidemic in Shreveport, and there's these five priests, that totally selfless, actually sacrificed their own lives to serve during this horrible event. And there's a documentary that's been made about them. This documentary is being played all over the world. It's winning all kinds of awards, and it was based on a book that was written by our guest today. Okay,
yeah.
That's the story here.
That's
so
incredible.
Dr. Cheryl White, she's a professor of history at Louisiana State University Shreveport. She's a teacher, author, speaker, fresh back from Rome, and her television appearances. So, man, Dr. White, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. This sounds like this is going to be fun.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, that could be. It just could be fun.
It has promise.
It sounds that way.
Well, you know, when Paul brought up the fact that we're going to be talking about history today, I knew that we had the right person on. Dr. White, we've talked to you a lot on KTBS about many different things in our community, but this one in particular, this is one that I interviewed you about, did an in-depth story years ago. So as Paul was saying, these five priests were really incredible. We're going to enjoy this today.
Right.
That's right.
Good.
So, I mean, you've got such a diverse experience in history. Now, how did you get so interested in history, and what were you doing in Rome just recently?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know how I got interested in history, but I can tell you it's been a lifelong love. It's the first thing I ever read were histories. So I always knew that's what I wanted to study. But I was in Rome, actually, in the archives, the Vatican, researching on another project, and also meeting with the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints related to these five priests.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit. Well, just tell us about the five gentlemen.
Sure.
And how this came about that you found this story and now that it's become this so critically acclaimed documentary.
Sure. So you sort of set the context for it when you said that that there was an 1873 yellow fever epidemic in Shreveport. Mm-hmm. And I think if people understand that, we can begin to approach how this story really shapes our history as a city and also gives us a model we can sort of live by. So the city lost one quarter of its population in about 12 weeks.
Wow.
And when you think about that on today's scale, we'd be talking about 50,000 people dead in a very short period of time. Many people fled the city. They thought that was the answer, you know, was to get away from the fever. And in this case, we have five Roman Catholic priests who all made a very crucial choice. Two of them were already in the area. A third was in Webster Parish, what is today Bossier Parish, actually. Mm-hmm. And those three made the decision to stay. And care for those who were sick and dying.
Wow.
The remarkable part of the story is not just that they decided to stay, but that two others who were in safe places, one in Natchitoches, one in Monroe, made the choice to come to Shreveport, knowing that they were going to die.
And I'm sure there were all kinds of people that were advising them against that.
Yes.
Do you not understand that you're going to be putting yourself in the epicenter? You could lose your life, you could die.
Right, and actually we have some beautiful historical records about that. The fourth priest to die, Father Louis Gergaud, was pastor in Monroe. He stepped on the stagecoach to come to Shreveport. He had in his hand, we think, the telegram from Father Belay in Shreveport asking him to please come. And he stepped on the stagecoach and someone said to him, you know, why are you leaving us? yellow fever could come here. We need you here. Mm-hmm. And he responded to his associate pastor who was standing with him, and he said, write to the bishop and tell him I go to my death. It is my duty and I must go.
Wow.
In Natchitoches, Father Levesoit was preparing to leave to come to Shreveport, and a crowd gathered around him and said, please don't go. And someone hollered out and said, you are going to your death. And he said, and I quote, I believe it, but it is the surest and shortest path to heaven. And he got on his horse and came to Shreveport, and he lived less than 10 days. So the story here is not just yellow fever and not just Shreveport. It's sort of a universal human story, mm-hmm. right? That when we have a difficult choice to make, when we're faced with those difficult choices, we really can make the choice to help others.
Well, this documentary, so I was looking up the documentary.
Yes.
And it's critically acclaimed. Let me tell you some of the awards this thing has won. So Best Feature Documentary at the Southern Cal Film Festival, Best Feature Documentary at the Europe Film Festival, Gold Award Feature Documentary at the Spotlight Documentary Film Awards,
yes.
and winner of Best Feature Documentary at the Christian Film Festival.
Yes.
So why does this film have such universal appeal across, yeah. I mean, in Southern Cal documentaries and in the Christian film documentaries? Very interesting. Why is it so compelling?
Right. I do think that's an interesting story there, that you have this unique nexus that happens between what we would say it was Christian, mm-hmm. or religious media and secular media. And I think it speaks to the universality of the story, that we're telling a story that mm-hmm. has broad human appeal. It just happens to be five Roman Catholic priests.
Mm. Wow. Obviously, you know, this story's been around for
yes.
a while, and the process and things like that. How did you get approached to actually get involved with the film, and how did you kind of get the ball rolling for something like that?
Okay.
That's incredible.
Well, so the research on the book really began going back to 2016, 2017, and we knew that there was a story. My co-authors and I, Father Peter Mangum and William Ryan Smith, we knew there was a story that needed to be told. So we began compiling the research for the book, writing the book. The book is called Shreveport Martyrs of 1873, The Surest Path to Heaven, which is Father Levesoit's quote.
Right.
And once the book was out there and we realized that the canonization cause was going to proceed, that they are now in the Vatican's canonization process to become saints.
So for non-Catholics,
yes.
what is a canonization
so
process?
So for non-Catholics, yeah, the canonization process is a process by which, and it can take centuries, mm-hmm. but it's a process by which people who have lived remarkable or exemplary model lives, mm-hmm. what we would say from a Catholic perspective are holy lives, there's a process by which they are formally recognized in the church and become saints. The canonization process leads to sainthood. So after that happened, the book came out and there was wide interest in the story. The LSUS Foundation actually funded the production of this feature-length documentary. We had no idea that it was going to be so critically acclaimed.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Charles Scott, who is a film producer and director from Las Vegas, is the one who adapted our book to the film. Mm-hmm. And it was his creative vision, but yeah, Shreveport story.
It was all filmed here in Shreveport?
It was, exactly. Well, except what we had to film in Washington, D.C., with the Vatican Ambassador to the United States,
okay.
who's
yeah.
been a great, great champion for this cause. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I'd like to ask you about kind of back to the process of these five priests, mm-hmm. and kind of what would propel this for us to get an answer sometime soon when it comes to them getting sainthood? Does Pope Francis get involved?
Yes.
And talk about how that could help the
cause. Did you see the Pope when you were in, you said you were at the Vatican last week.
Only from a distance.
Oh.
He waved.
Hey, Pope.
He waved. Yeah. No, the process is that, of course, begins locally. So it begins with the diocesan bishop, Bishop Francis Malone, on December 8th of 2020, actually declared them to be servants of God, which is the first step in the process. So our research continues now to finalize the Historical Commission report, which I am chairing, And once that, all of their biographical information is gathered together, it's all assembled into one large report that all goes back to Rome. And yes, it is Pope Francis who will then decide if they will be venerable, which is the next phase in the process. So one of the ways I've heard this put is that it's the local bishop, and then it's the Pope, and then the last two steps, beatification, blessed, or canonization, saint, those last two steps require miracles. So it's the bishop, the Pope, and God, is how I've heard that put.
What a process. Yeah. We need to get a copy of this film to the Pope. We need to send this right to Pope Francis.
Hey, Pope
He's going to watch this.
There you go. I would love that.
How do we watch the film now? Is it possible? Is it streaming somewhere?
Right now, it is not available, but that should be changing very quickly. We are hoping to have this out to the public. I would say it's pending, but it is more immediate than I hope to say.
Wow.
Okay, so it's in the process right now.
Yes.
I guess they're shopping it to vendors, trying to get it on like Netflix or Amazon.
But you know,
it is our goal that
it would no one would have to pay to see this.
Okay.
I mean, this is such a remarkable story and an inspiring story for all of us that I think it is our profound wish that it be free to anyone who wants to see it.
The story behind it, I think that you don't have to be Catholic to understand the selflessness.
Right.
And I think that, you know, this is the act itself and also the film is something that any religion, you know, any denomination members can get behind this and be like, this is incredible what these guys did.
Right. It is a truly universal story. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to be a religious person at all, a person of faith, to understand that that there is something about our human condition that when we're faced with difficult choices, we know in our heart of hearts what the right thing is to do. And I think that's universal to humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And is that depicted in the film? Is it a like a narrative, like a fictional, like it's happening, or is it more of a here and there?
What we really wanted to focus on was the true selflessness of their choices.
Mm-hmm.
In every single case, and think of it like one passing the baton to another, because that's literally how the timeline went, which is another thing very striking about it, is the timeline with which they died. But it's a choice, and it's a choice that not many people would make. You know, I've asked myself, I mean, I think we all went through this probably when we were in the early phases of COVID.
Right.
This is when we were writing the book and actually finishing putting all the polish on the story. Yeah, I mean, I think we can relate to that to some extent. I was terrified of getting COVID in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I think many of us were.
Yeah, I think a lot of us were, sure.
And, you know, when you're faced with that choice, would I really do that? Would I really make a choice to put myself in a situation where I knew I would contract it, but believing I would die? Mm-hmm. That's a remarkable level of commitment.
It certainly is. I tell you what, wow.
For strangers. I mean, if you think about it. I mean, I took my dad to the hospital and he had COVID and it was scary.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to get in the car with him. You know, and nobody wants to get in the car with him now when he's driving, but I didn't want to get in the car with him then. And it's my dad. But you know, you do what you do. But for strangers, that would definitely be a challenge.
And that is the key. And Shreveport was overwhelmingly Jewish and Protestant. Hmm. You know, at this, Shreveport was not a Catholic city in 1873. Well, it was still not a Catholic city, less than 6%. But this was, you know, not about race or gender or your religious identity or age. It was about being there for whoever needed the help, and they did. They were.
I think for the Catholics too, one thing I noticed the first thing I did when I walk into Holy Trinity Catholic Church is to see the murals and the stained glass honoring these men. It's a very powerful thing.
Yeah. So the stained glass, that's an interesting story, because there's massive windows in Holy Trinity. I would encourage anybody to go and see those windows. Yeah. Those went in right after World War II. So that tells you that from 1873 until 1945, 1946, when those windows went in, that their memory has not been forgotten. Their significant contribution of their lives had not been forgotten. But think about all the things that had happened in between 1873 and 1945, 1946.
Sure.
You know, we went through Reconstruction in the South. Mm-hmm. There were two major world wars and a Great Depression in between at the beginning of the 20th mm-hmm. century. So it's encouraging for me to see signs like that pop up that mm-hmm. here we are all these years later, and let's remember them in stained glass. I think it's a beautiful tribute.
I agree.
That is, because yeah. definitely a lot of events happening yeah. to remember that. So obviously the impact they had on our community is amazing.
Right.
So history has a big impact. So I know we came mostly to talk about this film, but you're sought after in all sorts of disciplines. I mean, you write books, you're on podcasts all the time, but now you're recently on television. Now, what's these series of historical yeah. television yeah. programs you've been asked to be on?
She's worldwide.
So I was actually contacted to be part of a series called History's Greatest Mysteries, which is on the History Channel.
Mm-hmm.
It is hosted by Lawrence Fishburne. You may remember him. He was Morpheus in The Matrix. That's what I think every time I see him.
Sure.
He's Morpheus,
yeah.
right. But so this is a show that's actually in its sixth season now
mm-hmm. yeah,
that takes mysteries. In other words, there is no answer to it. And they
right.
present several different theories about what the answer is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always someone who brings a different perspective. And usually, mm-hmm. usually always, a scholar who will sort of keep everyone on track.
Right, the boat.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I was called in to do one on the Knights Templar, and mm-hmm. Which is fascinating. But then while I was there, I was also asked about a relic they found out I knew about, the Shroud of Turin. So I did an episode there, too. And then I've been actually called back to do several more episodes for the new season. So it's exciting.
Yeah.
It's
where can we watch those?
So those stream on the History Channel. You can cool. actually just go to historychannel.com and stream them. Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the expert on the Shroud of Turin, which is amazing. You could definitely do a long story on that.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Would you say that's the most researched?
It's the most studied object in the world.
In the world.
Yeah.
And you're the expert. They call you onto the History Channel to talk about it.
I was going to say that's another thing that you and Father
yes.
Mangum teamed up on.
Yes, that's exactly
not too
right.
long ago.
That's
yeah.
exactly right. Father Peter mm-hmm. Mangum, who's in Monroe now, he's at the Church of Jesus the Good Shepherd, but he used to be the rector of the cathedral mm-hmm. here in Shreveport. And that is, he's also an expert on the Shroud. And so, yeah, we were a mighty force to be contended with here on the Shroud.
One thing I find fascinating is, you know, that's what I love about history is the fact that, you know, thousands of years have gone by. We have the most sophisticated levels of science that history has ever had. And there are still so many questions.
Yes.
And it really mm-hmm. makes, I mean, it makes the mind just
boggles
just wonder.
The mind,
yeah, absolutely.
It does.
It really does. The yeah. Shroud is, I mean, I describe the Shroud, so what we're talking about for the seven people out there that haven't heard of the Shroud of Turin.
It's probably more than
and
seven.
And then I want to go back to history, the history of Shreveport.
There's
because that's where you've
seven.
Definitely written several
sure.
books.
Yeah. No, so the Shroud of Turin we're talking about is a 14.5-foot strip of linen cloth that millions of people believe is the burial linen of Christ. It's described in all four gospel accounts, and it bears the image of a man who was crucified and beaten in Roman fashion. The image itself is so compelling that we cannot reproduce it in any laboratory in the world today. So yeah, it's I said the most compelling thing in the world. I think it probably is. Definitely
well,
it's is.
Because you said every discipline has studied
every
it.
Every discipline.
And no one can
right.
disprove it.
No one
now,
can
there
disprove
there are
it.
Some people I remember a few years back that were saying, oh, the carbon dating's wrong on
right.
this thing. It's really from the 1300s or something like that.
Well, it was carbon 14 dated to 1260 to 1390, but what has come into question is the carbon 14 dating itself.
Mm.
We've been able to demonstrate in the last few years that the sample where they took, where they cut actually the fabric to test was from an area of the cloth that was rewoven in the Middle Ages. So you would expect to get a medieval date.
After the big fire.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing has been through it. Through
yeah,
it.
It's been through
yeah.
two fires.
Yeah.
Been in two fires, yeah.
So, you know, for those that don't know, I mean, how would it even survive being around for 2,000 yeah. plus years?
I think it speaks to, even if it were a medieval linen, the fact that it has survived in such
yes.
great shape tells us a lot about what people have believed it to be.
Mm-hmm.
That it's been that cared for.
And isn't it powerful for you?
Yeah.
To see, I mean, when we had the replica here in Shreveport,
yes.
I had the chance to go and check that out, mm-hmm. and just seeing it and standing there and like, ugh. And I mean, I knew it was a replica, but I'm sure, you know, for you, that has to be like a major driving factor for what you do.
Yeah. Well, and I had the opportunity to see the Shroud in Turin last summer as part of a small group with an event for the Archbishop. And mm-hmm. I can tell you that seeing the real thing is overwhelming. And of course, then, you know, after I got past the emotional sort of aspect of reacting to something I've studied so many years, I had sort of the scholars step in and say, okay, well, there's that water stain and there's that burn mark. And, you know, it's like the mm-hmm. the academic mind went to work. But but that's the thing that the Shroud does, is it pulls us in from every direction, mm-hmm. philosophically, scientifically, historically, religiously. I mean, it appeals to every aspect of us. Mm-hmm. That says a lot.
That's pretty, that's awesome, powerful.
Well, so
we want to get back to history.
Yes,
but I mean,
because we could do
weird.
A whole episode.
Well,
on
we
this
do
route.
Have just a couple of minutes left, so yes, we could sit here and talk to you all
but
day.
But the
Dr.
history of Shreveport. So here's what a lot of people would be interested in. You've written books on the haunting aspect of Shreveport.
Let's go from the sacred
Let's
to
go
the
from
profane.
The yeah, from yeah, but
yes,
told you we'd
but
cover
I
it
think,
all.
I think that you're. Your position on that is not, oh yes, I believe in ghosts, as much as, okay, so here's a ghost story. Now right. here's the actual history on how that happened. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And mm-hmm. I think that the popular interest in the paranormal serves history well, mm-hmm. because everyone who lived can be a ghost, and it's a great way to connect people to history, is to mm-hmm. to reach that kind of that popular culture appeal. And then sort of a bait and switch, though, you know, when you take them on a haunted tour, they think that they're going to see ghosts, and I tell them history stories. But
so you do haunted tours?
I do.
Okay. In Shreveport?
I do haunted and wicked tours too.
Wicked
tours. Shreveport was a wicked place.
Wow. What does that mean? Wicked tour.
Wicked tours. So, you know, that was another book. It's called Wicked Shreveport, and it's stories from the frontier town that, you know, we're the furthest point west in the United States until Texas came into the Union in 1845. We were the frontier. So we had gunfights in the streets, bordellos on the riverfront. I mean, you name it. This was a wicked place.
And you do tours.
I do.
How often do you do these tours? How does a person get to one of your tours?
You know,
me and Nate are coming.
I was going to say, now this is fascinating.
It actually, after COVID, it's been a little bit difficult getting the numbers back up. And so last October is really the first time we were able to do like walking tours again with mm-hmm. large groups, cemetery tours primarily. But I do hope to get back to the bus rolling haunted tours this year.
That is so cool. Yeah. How do people find out about that?
Actually, there's a Facebook page called Historic Haunts of Shreveport, which is
Historic Haunts of Shreveport.
Okay. It is that's the title of the 2010 book that I co-wrote with Dr. Gary Joyner. People can find that on Facebook, and we announce tours periodically. And all the funds go back to these historic sites that we visit. We don't keep the money. We like to give back to historic preservation.
So tell me just quickly, like one of the stories that's a crowd's favorite, kind of a little summary.
Oh, one of the crowd favorites. The Municipal Auditorium makes the list of every national list of haunted places in America. Municipal Auditorium in Shreveport is in the top five because of the Louisiana Hayride, the ghost of Elvis, the ghost of Hank Williams, you know. So people love that. They love the story, and they love the music history too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. This has been an awesome
good.
Unfortunately, we've got to wrap things up now.
I can't believe we're already out of time.
I know. I knew it was going to go fast. But Dr. White, too, I know folks watching, listening to this right now want to get more information on the film.
Yes.
Where can they check that out and kind of follow what you do?
The website is ShreveportMartyrs.org, one word, ShreveportMartyrs.org. And there's all the information there about our five priests and all their biographies, important news articles, and also a link to the trailer for the film and a link to the books as well.
Okay.
Okay. And Paul and I are going to sign up for these tours as soon as we get rolling again. All right.
You can get the word out. I want to go on one of these tours.
I love it.
I do too.
I love it.
Nobody better to listen to. All right, Dr. White. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you.
All righty.
In between all your other TV appearances and film festival
come
tours.
Come to the hometown studio.
Trip to Rome.
That's right.
Make sure you check her out very soon on the History Channel, an episode coming up. Well, another great Good to Know podcast. And remember, we have new episodes coming up every other Wednesday, and you can always find these on where we typically listen to podcasts. Well, Dr. White, thank you again so much. And Paul, great show as always, my
friend. Thank you, Nate.
Our pleasure. All right, we hope that everybody have a happy and healthy and history-filled day.